The meeting will come to order. Members, welcome back to the Committee on Ways and Means. We have a quorum. First order of business is the approval of the minutes of December 4th and May 14th. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections, additions, or changes? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, a couple things. First of all, Ms. Kodrick, thank you for the cookies. We look forward to many more as we start another year. Secondly, I'd like to introduce Eric Anderson. Eric, stand up. Eric is our page this year. Let's give Eric a round of applause. Let me talk just very briefly about our schedule. Today we're going to talk about comparisons of different states. We had a hearing like this last year. It was popular based on what people told me, and I think it's very useful to see where our competitors, I guess we can call them for lack of a better word, are. And so we're going to go through that today. Also, we're going to look at some of the long-range planning initiatives that previous governors as well as Governor Plenty has. That's a topic that I don't think has gotten the attention that it should deserve, and so we have someone from the governor's office to review that. Talking about our schedule for the rest of this month, just so people know, next week we are going to have a hearing on special revenue funds. As you know, we have a huge number of special revenue funds in the state. We had a hearing last year on the big special revenue funds. However, as some people know, within the regular special revenue fund, we have something like 1,000 other special revenue funds that are subsets of that main special revenue fund. And I've heard some calls that we should cut down on the numbers. There are other people that feel that there are good reasons to have that many, and that, in fact, many states have a higher percentage of their spending in special revenue funds than we do. And so I thought we should have a hearing to delve into that a bit more. On February 19th, we're going to have a hearing on the state of the pension funds in the state. We had a hearing on pension funds last year. There are some pension funds that are having some problems. I thought it would be appropriate to have a recap of pension funds again this year in a hearing. And on February 26th, assuming the forecast is out on time, we'll have a hearing on the February forecast, which I'm sure everyone will be very interested in seeing. It would be nice if we could get done by 3 o'clock today. I can't guarantee it, but in the interest of those who showed up on time, I think we should get going and start talking about some of the different state rankings. Representative Dorn.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Real quickly, I don't think I heard the date for next week, but I'm assuming it would be the 12th.
It would be the 12th, yes. Regular hearing time, 12:30 on Thursday. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question. Will we be hearing from representatives of the pension funds as well as probably pension commission staff, or what's the approach that's going to be on that?
You know, I haven't yet decided on that. I think that I would at least like the Minneapolis Teachers Fund to have a representative here. I don't know that we're in a position that we can have every single pension fund have a representative because there's so many of them, but that one is, as you know, probably the one that is in greatest difficulty, so I think that it would be at least appropriate to invite them.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, that's what I was referring to. You mentioned the funds that were in trouble. I don't know how many that might be, but it might be helpful to hear from the funds themselves that are in that category.
Yeah, and it's, you know, whether one's in trouble or not is, in some cases, a little bit of a call. There's not really much doubt about that one. You know, there are some others that maybe you have some problems, although not as severe as that. And I guess we'll just have to look at the schedule and see if it makes sense to call others in, too.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. With that, let me welcome from House Research, Ms. Novak, to start the presentation. Ms. Novak, welcome to the committee, which you are usually at anyway. A few technical difficulties? Well, while we're solving the technical difficulties, why don't I tell you what, I'll have Mr. Marks start with his presentation first while we're solving these, and then we'll go to Ms. Novak. Members, this is in your packet on today. And Mr. Marks, why don't I have you start out? Maybe you can hold up the charts you're going to refer to. Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe they're the last two in the packet. They're on legal paper. One says price of government information. One says Minnesota state government expenditures. And this is a little bit out of the order we were going to plan them these in, but the price of government one first. And this information is not comparison with other states. This is just more Minnesota trend information that we wanted to present here. The one that says price of government information is the price of government, or it's the is actually defined in statute, I believe, as state and local government revenue as compared to Minnesota personal income in Minnesota. And we've had some discussions in the past. This essentially includes almost all revenue collected by state and local governments. Just one note in here, federal revenue that comes to the state or revenue collected by the federal government and then passed through to the state is not included because it's measuring revenue collected by state and local governments. You can see in the middle of the page going across there the line that says total revenue as a percent of personal income. When we started measuring this in the early 1990s, it was at 16.4% and climbed up into the 17.5% range. And currently we're around 16%, as low as 13.9% in calendar year 2001 or fiscal year 2002. Keep in mind that this is a function of two factors, revenue collected and personal income. So it's dividing one by the other. So to the extent that either one varies significantly, it affects this percentage. The upper half of the page has the information on by category for state revenue, local non-school revenue, school district revenue, and then totals, and then also a line for personal income there. On the lower part of the page, we have the information divided out by several different categories. Between the first two sets of line, our revenue as a percent of personal income and is divided between tax revenue and non-tax revenue. You can see that the tax revenue has declined slightly over the years. It actually increased a little bit in the middle years and has declined slightly. The non-tax revenue has stayed pretty stable in there.
Wave the sheet around that you're looking at?
It's one that says price of government information at the top in a legal piece of paper.
Yeah, Mr. Marks, I think one of the things that's kind of interesting on this sheet is if you look at the middle of it and you look at the personal income number and then right below that, which is right above the first line, you see total revenue as a percent of personal income, which is the price of government. You can see how in calendar year 2001 it dropped down to 13.9%, which was partly a function of what a big increase in personal income we had that year, the last year of the big stock market boom. Then we had the stock market drop back quite a bit the following year, as did personal income, and you see the price of government bump up quite a bit.
Sure, that's correct. On the lower part of the page, the second category there, revenue as percent of personal income, breaks it out by state, local, and school, or local, non-school, and school district. And I think those are largely stable across there, except that the school district one has dropped from a high of around 2% in the first years on there to the 1% range now in the later years, and that largely a function of the state takeover of the general education formula, or the general education levy. And then the final grouping at the bottom shows the state-local ratio, generally in the neighborhood of 60% state, 40% local. It's varied by a few percentage points and is higher on the state side in recent years, again, reflecting a lot of things, but probably the single biggest factor in there is the state's takeover of the general education levy. On the other sheet, Minnesota state government expenditures, this is just an attempt to track or to show the trend in expenditures over roughly a 14 or 15 year period here. The fiscal years are listed on the left side of the page. Minnesota population and Minnesota personal income are listed there because they are then, spending is divided by those to get some of the comparison numbers. The first grouping in the middle of the page is all operating funds. And this is from the consolidated fund statement. It would be the general fund, which is shown alone in the, on the right side, but the general fund, federal funds, highway funds, special revenue funds, essentially all the funds that the state tracks in as operating funds are included in there. And you can see the spending, the total spending number, the dollar change, the percent change. And you might know it in the percent change, there is actually a decrease in projected in fiscal year 2005 there. And then that spending amount is divided by personal income and on by dollars per capita. The percent of personal income has been in the has varied in the 12 to 13% range over the years. The dollars per capita have grown as spending changes have occurred. And I think that's probably all I was going to note there. On the general fund, the right half of the page, the general fund only numbers, again, the same kinds of comparisons in the percent change and the dollar change category. It was actually a decrease in fiscal year 2004 from the previous year, a slight decrease there. One thing that was kind of interesting as a percent of personal income, general fund spending has stayed very constant right around the 8% range. I think the lowest was in the 7.7% and the highest 8.2%. So it's been pretty constant over the years there. And then the last column showing dollars per capita of general fund spending.
Well, I think it's if you look at these two, it's interesting that 14 years ago, all operating funds, 12.1% of personal income in the state was going toward the state for its various operating funds. And now 14 years later, it's 12.7%. So I mean, despite all the cutbacks this last year, and this is current data, for fiscal year 2005, I mean, the trend is still up over the last 14 years, despite all that was done with cutting back the budget and the pruning that was done to deal with the budget deficit. And interestingly, on just the general fund, we were at 7.9% 14 years ago, and we're at 7.8% right now. So, as Mr. Marks said, not a lot of change there in terms of the sort of historic factor, although still, for all funds, it's had a trend line up a bit over the years. Any questions for Mr. Marks? Any comments on the information he's brought forward? All right, then let me go to Ms. Novak. It looks like we're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We appear to be in business. I just want to orient you to some of the materials that are in the packet. I'm not going to talk off of most of them, but just so you know what they are. There's a list of definitions that talk about where the sources of the governing rankings come from and what's included. There are four spreadsheets, that one for each year, that compare the states in the Midwest, the U.S. average, and some other comparisons for each of the factors that are ranked. And then there's the actual pages from Governing Magazine, the most recent edition that was used in the rankings. And then finally, there's a copy of the slide presentation. These rankings rely on the measures that are published in Governing Magazine. They've published them for the last 7 or 8 years. They don't change very much over time. They're pretty consistent in what they do, so it's a relatively good source of information to compare states on. They actually use the Census Bureau information to establish their rankings, and the census is done every 5 years with the survey for the intervening years. The most recent survey, 2001, was somewhat of a disappointment. The information that came back was insufficient to provide detailed state-by-state information. So unfortunately, the most current year that we have right now is for fiscal year 2000. So these rankings are based on fiscal year 2000 and earlier.
Okay.
The first thing I'm going to talk about is population rankings. This actually doesn't come from Governing magazine, but from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Population is a relatively stable measure. Minnesota has tended to stay the same. In 1992, we were ranked 20, and by comparison, Wisconsin in 1992 was ranked 18. That was enough of a population shift in Wisconsin to cause them to lose a congressional part of their congressional delegation. Governing tends to use population as the basis for their comparison. There are other ways of comparing states. One of them is on personal income. And as you'll see, Minnesota ranks much higher in personal income than we do in population. In 2002, we were ranked 7th in per capita personal income. This is it. In these rankings, I've excluded the District of Columbia. If you put the District of Columbia in, it shifts it just slightly. Wisconsin, by comparison, which is relatively close to us in population, has a much lower ranking in per capita personal income.
You know, on that, I should say, before we move on to the next slide, I heard from, I think it was Art Rolnick from the Federal Reserve, that 40 years ago, we were ranked number 29 in personal income. And so, you know, one of the things that is always interesting to keep in mind is how we have really changed in that over the long term, over the last few decades. And to be number 7 is really a success story. Ms. Novak.
This is the beginning of the governing rankings. The first one is on total revenue per capita. I'm going to go through these relatively quickly. There's a lot of numbers. I won't talk about every single number, but I'll try to give you some of the highlights. This is a measure of all the money received by the government from outside sources, except for debt. You can see that Minnesota is ranked 8th, and we're above the U.S. average. On the left-hand side of the chart, it shows a comparison to the 5 states in our region. We have a wide range within our region. South Dakota is ranked among the lowest in total revenue per capita, and Wisconsin is one of the highest. This is tax revenue per capita. It's all compulsory contributions to government. Again, you can see that Minnesota is ranked quite highly. We're above the U.S. average. This is a much more stable measure than total revenue. We're the highest in our region, but again, our region shows a wide variation. It goes from Minnesota ranked at 5 to South Dakota at 46. Now we're going to look at some spending comparisons. This is total spending per capita. Again, over this time period, Minnesota has been ranked quite highly. We're above the U.S. average, and we're the highest in our region. Once again, the region shows a wide variation, with South Dakota coming in at near the bottom of expenditures per capita. This is a measure of all money paid by the government except for that money related to debt service and agency transactions. Now, this is a measure of debt. This is state and local debt combined. Minnesota is ranked 14th in the nation. This is a measure of the long-term obligations, and it includes that type of debt that is not backed by the full faith and credit of the government, so it includes revenue-type bonds. Minnesota, as you can see, has a relatively high percentage of debt per capita, but we're relatively low in the share of that debt that's the state's obligation. In other words, local governments in Minnesota tend to have more debt than the state. And that makes us different than Wisconsin, which has about an equal share of state and local debt. The next ranking is spending, K-12 spending per capita. This is a different measure than spending per pupil. Most of the comparisons that we tend to see are spending per pupil. This is actually a population-based measure. Minnesota ranks quite high in this over this time period. And we're above the U.S. average. We're very close to Wisconsin. They also tend to spend close to the same amount as Minnesota. And once again, we have a wide range within our region, with South Dakota being a very low spending state. Although this spending per capita on K-12 education doesn't have as wide a range overall as some other measures. Higher education, we're ranked kind of right in the middle of the state rankings. We're slightly above the U.S. average. Iowa is the big spender in our region, although they don't spend all that much more than Minnesota does. And once again, South Dakota is kind of bringing up the bottom.
Representative Carlson.
When we say our ranking in higher education, does that include all spending, for example, the university research and service?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, according to the definition, it includes activities of degree-granting post-secondary institutions operated by state and local governments. It excludes ag extension and experiment stations and hospitals. So my understanding is that it would include...
It would include then, Mr. Chairman, research, apparently, from...
Would appear to.
Okay.
Yes. Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, the next measure is a broad measure of welfare spending per capita. This includes spending on the elderly, TANF, aid to disabled persons. It's a very broad measure. It includes medical care and cash assistance. As you can see, Minnesota ranks quite highly at number 4. We're above the U.S. average, and we're the highest in our region. And this is kind of a broken record, but this region shows a wide variation, going from Minnesota ranked at 4 to South Dakota at 39. This is a measure of welfare recipients per 10,000 population. Compared to the last slide, this is a narrow measure of welfare assistance. It only includes those recipients who get TANF cash assistance. And we're ranked high, but not as high as we were in the spending category. And again, we have a wide range in our region. This is another measure of how good your population is doing. It's the percent of the population without health insurance. A higher number means that you have fewer uninsured. So Minnesota's rank at 47 means that we have a relatively lower share of our population uninsured than many other states, most other states. And in our region, Iowa has the absolute lowest share in the U.S. of uninsured population. The U.S. average is 14.6, almost double that of the state of Iowa.
Ms. Novak, let me stop you a second there. It's kind of interesting that the spread between our area really isn't that much there. 7.5% for Iowa versus 9.6% for North Dakota. I assume South Dakota is in between there somewhere. Do you know, do North Dakota, South Dakota, do they have subsidized health care programs similar to Minnesota Care, for example?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to this. I'm not sure how great a measure of uninsurance this is. It seems to suggest in the definitions that it may include only those people who are eligible for medical assistance. So it may not be a real broad based measure of uninsured. You have to be really uninsured, so uninsured that you're eligible for public medical assistance.
Okay, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This has been quoted a number of times. I just recently read it again in the last few days, that Minnesota had fewer uninsured than any other state in the nation. The figures from wherever you're getting them would not indicate that.
Ms. Novak, response?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Earhart, I'm not sure that the two are incompatible. It depends in part on the number of uninsured would depend on your population, and we aren't among the largest populations, but we do rank very low in the percent uninsured. So we could, in fact, have the lowest number of uninsured.
Could be, Representative Earhart, that this is 2001 data, and you may just be dealing with newer data, too.
Going on since we started Medicare, was the time when Medicare was created, and it was just quoted by a couple of people in the healthcare presentations last year, and I read it in the paper somewhere in the last 10 days. So it's a figure that has remained. As a matter of fact, I got in a big argument with some health officials in Cuba on this one. In any event, because they're telling me how good their basic primary health care system is down there, and it is. But this is, these figures that you have came from a different source, obviously, than what everybody else was using to quote the fact that Minnesota has fewer uninsured than any other state in the country.
Well, they're not that far apart, Representative Earhart. I mean, here we're number 47 instead of, number 50, which is good, having that number. But I've got Representative Carlson and Representative Huntley. Representative Carlson.
Just as a matter of information, Mr. Chairman, on these rankings, some of the charts we show Iowa, South Dakota, then we show North Dakota, South Dakota, and then another chart we show Wisconsin at times. My question is, why aren't we consistent with showing the upper Midwest in each of the charts instead of kind of flipping back and forth with the ones that we're showing?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, the spreadsheets do show all of the states in the upper Midwest. The comparison on the left shows the state that has the lowest rank and the highest rank among the five states in our region.
So what you're saying is, there is this spreadsheet that people have in their packets that have got basically the five-state area, North and South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota. You're saying when you see, for example, on this one, you see North Dakota at number 38 and Iowa at number 50, you're saying that Wisconsin and South Dakota fall in between those two.
Yeah, I follow it now.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, that's good to point that out. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, when you measure uninsured, there's a couple of different ways to do it. One is you survey the population at that particular moment and ask them, are they uninsured or do they have insurance? Or you could, another way to do it, is ask them, have you been uninsured at any time in the past 12 months? And you get different numbers. The usual number I see is that Minnesota is about 5.8%. And we're always amongst the top three or four in terms of being the best. Mm-hmm. So depending how you measure it, some years we're up a little, some years we're down a little, but we're close to being the best.
Okay. Ms. Novak.
The next measure, Mr. Chair and members, is a measure of housing spending per capita. This is a measure of the construction and operation of housing projects and other activities that promote housing. This is a relatively volatile measure. You can see there's a lot of movement year to year. Minnesota in 2000 was ranked 11th, which is above the national average. In 1996, when we spent $106 per capita, we were ranked 9. North Dakota in 2000 was ranked highest in our region, and South Dakota at 46 was ranked lowest.
And just to be clear, Ms. Novak, this is public housing. These are public housing dollars. This isn't anything to do with private housing.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
The next measure is a spending measure ranking highway spending per capita. This is for the construction, operation, and maintenance of highways and roadways. And you can see that despite an increase in nominal dollars of the amount that we spend per capita, our ranking has gone down over the last over this four-year period. Unlike other measures, South Dakota is actually ranked quite highly in the spending on highways per capita. They're number three in the nation, and Wisconsin is the second lowest in this region. Minnesota is actually the lowest.
Representative Prinke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Novak, do you know where we rank in terms of number of state highway miles?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Prinke, I don't have that information in front of me, but I know we rank quite highly. We have a lot of highway miles for our population.
Last time I heard, we were fifth. Do you know if we're still approximately?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Representative Quigley. You've got all those highway lengths in your head, and you're just adding them up.
Mr. Chair, I do know we have a very, very high number of miles on township roads, and that kind of skews it. If you do just state roads in counties and cities, it's not as bad, but because of the town road miles that we have in the state, we have a very, very high amount of miles compared to the rest of the nation.
No, Representative Carlson.
On that point, though, wouldn't we also have to compare that with the size of the state? We're also a relatively large state.
That's why you have so many township roads.
Yeah, I mean, we would have to compare that ranking.
Representative Prinke.
While Representative Quigley is calculating that, maybe he could also find out, it's my understanding that as of 2 years ago, we still had some state-designated highway that was gravel road, and if he could find out if that's still gravel or if he's paved it by now.
Mr. Chair, I heard
Representative Quigley.
I heard Representative Seagren say the other day she had some in Bloomington that was still gravel, but I'm not sure.
It's only graded once a year.
Oh, it's only graded once a year.
Right in front of your parents' house.
One thing on this that I know you and I have talked about, Ms. Novak, is as I understand the way they measure spending, this is not appropriations done in 2000, for example. This is actually money paid out by the transportation department. So, for example, in 2000, people remember we had that special supplemental spending of about $450 million from the general fund for highways. That would, as I gather, not be in this number because while we appropriated it that year, it took 2 or 3 years for the money to actually be paid out to people building highways. So can you confirm, are we correct on that, Ms. Novak, that most of that money would not be in here but would be in later years?
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding. This also is a combination of state and local expenditures. It's not just the state's share of spending on highways.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, this next measure is a relatively new one. It's internet access. It's another form of highway, I guess. And as you can see, Minnesota ranks quite highly in this. We rank number 8th in the nation. Over half of the households in Minnesota at that time had internet access, above the U.S. average, which is just barely above 50%. And we rank much higher than the other states in our region.
I found it interesting, by the way, that the number one ranked state was Alaska. Ms. Novak, go ahead.
This next measure is a broad measure of environmental spending per capita, and it includes such things as spending on conservation, promotion, and development of natural resources. It also includes expenditures for sewers, disposal facilities, and landfills. So it's a very broad measure of environmental spending. As you can see, Minnesota, again, ranks quite highly. We're above the U.S. average. We're above the other states in our region. Our ranking has kind of gone up over this four-year time period. This is another measure that is somewhat related to the environment, but this is a broad measure of, it's labeled parks and recreation spending per capita, but it's actually a very broad measure of spending on recreational facilities, golf courses, beaches, swimming pools, zoos, museums, other cultural facilities. Minnesota, again, ranks quite high. We're sixth in the nation. We have a pretty stable ranking over this four-year time period. North Dakota, on the handout, I believe there's a typo. It says South Dakota is number one. It's actually North Dakota. The screen is correct. The paper copy is wrong. North Dakota this year was number one, spending $193 per capita. And this does jump around. It looks like it's very sensitive to particularly big projects that may occur in a state.
So if we do the three stadiums this year, it might bump us up a bit?
It could indeed. The next few measures are ones that relate to public safety. This is state and local spending for police protection. It includes traffic safety, crime prevention, and some local detention spending. Minnesota is kind of right smack in the middle of the U.S. in terms of its rank. We spend less than the U.S. average, but we have a very stable kind of rank. Again, in our region, we have a very wide variation. North Dakota this time is almost the lowest ranked state in the U.S., spending $106 per capita on police protection. This is a measure of correction spending per capita. In 2000, Minnesota ranked 39th, spending $120 per capita, which is less than the U.S. average and about in the middle of our region, but once again, we have a very wide variation in our region, with North Dakota again coming in at the lowest at $63 per capita. This is a measure of the actual population in state prisons. Minnesota's ranking has been very constant, right around 34, 35 over this four-year period. This rank is influenced definitely by the size of your population, but it's not directly related to the size of your population. Minnesota, as you remember, ranks 21st in population, and we rank 34th in prison population. By comparison, Wisconsin ranks 20th in total population and 22nd in prison population. And although the number of incarcerated people increased, the rank did not change very much. This is a measure of the...
I'm sorry, Representative Prinke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So are these... who's included in these numbers? Does this include people incarcerated in county jails as well as state facilities, or is this just state facilities?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Prinke, this measure is strictly state prison population.
Thank you.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair, we were both looking at that difference between us and Wisconsin, and we're almost, they're almost four times higher than we are, and I'm wondering if maybe they don't have any local prisons, they put everybody in the state, but that comparison business, because we're about the same size population.
Representative Huntley, it's my understanding that they do have a lot more people in prison. I think part of it is the community corrections stuff, too, that we have a lot more people involved in community corrections. But Ms. Novak, can you elaborate on that anymore?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, it is. I can concur with you that it is a dramatic difference, but I don't know what explains it.
You want to follow up? I see Mr. Carter back there. Could you come forward? Do you have an explanation you'd like to offer?
Is
Carger, welcome to the committee.
Gary Carger, fiscal analyst. Wisconsin does have quite a few more inmates than Minnesota, and I think part of the reason is the Minnesota Community Corrections Act, where we keep a lot of our population that, you know, the people that have been convicted at the local level. And in fact, I just heard that last year that Wisconsin contacted Minnesota to find out how we were doing things, why we had such a low population. But that, I think that is the main reason.
So I'm sorry, you say, Mr. Carger, that all of our people are in local jails, or are you saying that we just have a much lower incarceration rate?
I think it's we have a lower incarceration rate, but I think the individuals that are convicted, a lot of them are on probation. I think our probation number on probation currently is over 110,000.
Okay. Representative Cranky.
Mr. Chairman, just some information. I just talked to Assistant Commissioner of Corrections yesterday. These numbers probably are a little bit difficult to track in the context of in Minnesota, we have short-term offenders that are sent to state facilities, whereas, for example, he said that in Florida, unless you have a sentence over 2 years, you don't go to a state facility. So that's why I think you'd probably need to investigate these numbers a little further to get a better understanding of length of sentence and where those people serve their time, whether it's in a county or local facility versus a state facility.
Mr. Carger, let me just, I guess, ask you one other question. I know one chart that we do not have here that I have seen is incarceration rate, and I understand that we as a state have either the lowest incarceration rate in the country or the second lowest incarceration rate. Now, does that deal just with the state prison population, or does that deal with the local prison population as well? Do you know?
Mr. Chair, that deals only with the state prison population, and you are correct. From the numbers that we have seen, Corrections Yearbook, I think, ranks us 50th or 49th. The latest federal report had us tied, I think, last with Maine.
But we have relatively more people in local jails then, or we just have more people on probation?
I believe that we just probably have more people on probation. I'm not sure on the number that we have in jails, you know, how that would compare to the other states. And I think as Representative Krinke also said that some states, out east, I know that they put all their inmates, I think it was one state, in prison. Some of them have jails that, you know, it's up to 2 years, where, of course, Minnesota now we have, you know, anything over a year. And this year we also passed that legislation that allowed short-term offenders, those with 6 months or less, to serve locally.
Thank you. Ms. Novak, please continue.
Mr. Chairman and members, continuing on that theme, while we rank very low in our prison state prison population, we're beginning to rank higher in the growth in that population. The change in population from 2001 to 2002 was 6.8%, which is significantly above the U.S. average, but kind of in the middle of our regional average. Iowa at rank 38 was right at the U.S. average. These final rankings are a look at government. The first one is state government employees per 10,000 population. Minnesota ranks quite low. The year is 2003, and we had 184 state employees for every 10,000 residents. North Dakota was nearly the highest in the nation and definitely the highest in our region with 352 state employees for 10,000 population. Wisconsin was relatively low, the same as Minnesota. The next one looks at local government employees for 10,000 population. This is where Minnesota ranks much higher. We're ranked 7th, and we've been that ranking since 2000, with 577 local employees for every 10,000 population. And North Dakota, again, is near the top in the U.S. with 707. in Wisconsin is the lowest in our region, so we're all kind of clustered at the high end in this particular measure. We all have tend to have a lot of local employees relative to our population.
Our Representative Swenson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Novak, your local employees, would that include school district employees, or would it include counties and cities? And, you know?
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I'm not sure. I don't seem to have the description for that one. I'll have to look into that and get back to you.
One thing I should mention, that in some ways you should almost combine these two and then sort it out, because different states have sort of spread their functions differently, where some local governments do a lot that some state governments do and vice versa. So you almost should combine the two to get a better sense. Representative Wagenius.
Well, thanks, Mr. Chairman, for the opening. I've done that, and I want to share it with you. Can I do that?
Sure.
Or I didn't do it, but it's been done. And if I could have a page, just pass it out.
Oh, okay. Eric, could you help represent?
This conversation by celebrating personal income, per capita personal income, and that we're number 7, because that is great and it is worth celebrating. And so what this chart that you're going to be seeing does is look at state and local spending as a percentage of personal income. And it does combine because, as you just noted, that the state taxes in Minnesota are above the national average, but local taxes tend to be below because we take some of our state money and send it to our local units of government. So it's just helpful to have another way of looking at how we are, our measure of health, and, of course, high personal income is something that we should be celebrating and something we want to achieve. So that's why you see this chart. And if you have any questions, I would probably ask for some help to explain it, but perhaps I could do it myself.
Okay. And actually, if you look in the other handout, I'm not sure exactly if this is from the same information or not, and I haven't looked yet, but if you look at this other packet, they have some personal income information on there, and I'm guessing it's probably about the same, within a couple rankings of each other. It appears to be roughly in the same range. Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chairman, this is the last of the comparisons. This is average state and local government pay. The year is 2001. Minnesota ranked 12th in the nation with an average pay of nearly $40,000. Wisconsin was very close to us, ranked 16th with nearly $39,000. And South Dakota, again, was almost at the lowest in the nation. Minnesota slightly above the national average. There's, again, a very wide variation in our particular five-state area.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wasn't that personal income ranked at first, second, third PowerPoint piece? I think you said that the state economist mentioned that Minnesota had grown from 30th to 7th in the last 30 years.
We were from, 29th to 7th in the last 40 years is what I understand.
Wouldn't that belie then what we're trying to do right now, is turn Minnesota away from the model that they've been operating on for the last 30 years, which seems to have been very successful?
Well, I'm not sure what you're saying we're trying to do now, Representative Earhart. I guess it also comes down to what you think contributed to that big increase in personal income, and that is something that I'm sure we'll be debating more this session, because it's a very legitimate question. You know, was it state government that did that? Was it local government that did it? Was it other things that did it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we were having a high tax, high spend state, and now we're trying to turn that around and not be that, to some degree.
To some degree.
And maybe more than some degree. So my point is, if we are now going to take apart the model, which apparently has been successful, we better be very damn careful what we keep in part of it.
Well, we'll have to see if this model, you're also assuming, Representative Earhart, that the model, if that did work for the last 30 years, will it continue to work for the next 30? And I'm sure there'll be some debate about that as well. Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Earhart, I'll just give you one. I agree with you 100%. In 1960, when I graduated from the University of Minnesota, Minnesota was ranked number 4 in terms of percent of personal income that we invested in higher education. Today we're ranked 32nd. We're not nearly as high as Alabama and Mississippi and Arkansas. And so the question is, what kind of state are we leaving for our grandkids? You know, we lived in the 90s. That big increase in personal income ranking occurred mostly in the 90s. And we lived off of what our grandparents invested in our state during the 90s. And we're not making those investments today for our grandkids.
Well, actually, Representative Huntley, I think you'd find the biggest increase probably took place like in 2000, 2001, but that's probably something of a function of what happened with the stock market and such, too. The personal income issue, though, versus the per capita issues is a big issue, I mean, in terms of how you define it. Because if you look at, like, total spending on this chart, as a percentage of personal income, this chart has us number 18. If we look at it as a per capita ranking, what is our spending? We're number 4 in the country. So the fact that we are high in personal income is a real factor depending on which of those columns you want to look at. Representative Carlson.
Sure. On that question of how we've done the last 30 or 40 years, Representative Huntley and Representative Earhart have put that question on the table, and the thing that comes to my mind was the major change. When Wendell Anderson was governor, we called it the Minnesota Miracle, and how we moved in our investment in K-12 education as well at that point in time. And when you listen to people like Rolnick with the Federal Reserve, and they talk about those kinds of investments paying the largest dividends, I have to agree that we best be very careful as we move forward, because we have been successful, and we should try to build on our successes, and I'm quite concerned about what appears to be the beginning of the dismantling of what has worked well in the last 30 or 40 years.
Representative Osmond.
I have a question on number 16, the spending rank of the environment, and I'm wondering if it's we counting the cost of infrastructure and environmental activities, and the maintenance of those structures, is that part of that equation? For example, Minnesota is higher than South Dakota, but if you compare our wastewater treatment and landfills versus their two holes in the backyard and a burn barrel, I see where the cost
come on
is.
Now.
Well, a burn barrel doesn't cost as much as a landfill.
Yeah, but two holes.
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Osmond, this is a broad measure, and it does include landfills and septic systems and waste disposal.
So it would include the infrastructure. So the difference in their investment in the environment versus in maintenance, so it's showing up there.
That's correct. It's at an annual basis, so it doesn't reflect the long-term capital cost.
Thank you.
Representative Guineas.
Thank you. To Representative Osmond's question, one thing that would be in here that would be different from any other state, that we took over the cleaning or the sequestering of landfills At the request of the business community and our local units of government, because they were being sued to clean them up, we took it over at a huge cost. And so I suspect that huge cost is in this number and one of the reasons it drives it high, Representative Osman. I mean, you know those numbers are huge.
Ms. Novak.
That concludes my presentation.
All right. Mr. Wilson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Wilson, House Fiscal Staff. If you turn in Ms. Novak's handout to page 3 of the paper handout, and it's on the screen, she showed revenue rankings for tax. And as with all of those initial rankings, the latest year's data was 2000, fiscal year 2000. The census data, I think the reason why the 2001 data is not available yet is that they switched people to work on the five-year census, which will come out with 1992 data, which will be available. So we'll have a lot of more detail on spending and taxes and revenue at the state and local level in August of this year. But it means the data is less up-to-date than normal. I was asked, don't we have more recent data on taxes? And in fact, we do have more recent data on taxes, but only for state taxes. If you look at that, you'll see we ranked fifth. It says in 2000 we ranked fifth in total tax revenue per capita. We actually ranked fourth in state tax revenue per capita, but 31st in local revenue per tax revenue per capita. So I guess to start with the handout I want you to look at briefly is the handout. It's on legal size, and it has this graph on one side and then a chart on the other. My caution is, while we have more recent data on state taxes per capita and where we rank, it's very difficult to interpret state tax rankings because the states, as have been mentioned by a number of people, the states allocate or the way states split the government responsibilities between state and local, or at least the revenue raising responsibilities, varies tremendously. As the chart shows, the large graph shows, the state share of state and local taxes, this is not spending, but taxes, varies from a high of over 80% to less than 50%. Minnesota is a relatively high tax share state, as you all know, and what that means is our state tax rankings will tend to be higher than our state plus local together. With that caveat, though, on the other side of the page, I do give you the information. Again, this is all from census data, or at least the basic start is from census data, the same data that Ms. Novak's information came from on those first charts. And it shows on the left-hand side total state taxes, excluding local taxes. There are a few license fees in here, as a footnote points out, in the way census defines taxes. The governor has a definition of taxes that may differ from this, which includes some fees. If you see the rankings, they're fairly consistent. We were fifth from 93 in state taxes per capita up through 96, and we were fourth for a while. We were third in 2001. We're again fourth in 2002. The states that are above us in 2002 in state taxes were Hawaii, Delaware, and Connecticut. Wisconsin was the closest to us in the region, and they were ranked 11th in state taxes per capita. The other thing to note in there, though, is that there is a problem with the census data in how you handle the sales tax rebates. Sales tax rebates were collected as taxes, but then they were given back as tax rebates. Census just ignores the tax rebates. So in those years, 99, 2000, 2001, the rankings you see are assuming there were no sales tax rebates. If we assign the sales tax rebates and adjust the numbers, you'll see that we rank fifth in each of those years in per capita taxes instead of fourth, and third. And so if you're looking at a historical trend, how you want to handle the sales tax rebates. Other kinds of rebates, the property tax rebates that were done on the income tax return in 97 and 98, those are included in the census data as reductions in income taxes, but the sales tax rebates are just ignored, and it messes up the comparisons. On the right-hand side of the page, the same information is given for selected for a few years in total taxes, total state taxes as a percent of income. And note that we rank lower in taxes as a percent of income in 99, 6th, then 5th, then 6th, then finally 8th. And there is a correction. That should be 8th, not 7th in 2002. So we actually, we beat out Kentucky by the fourth decimal place. So it's so close as to be either 7th or 8th, depending on the data. Again, if you were to take the sales tax refunds into account, we rank 13th, 7th, or 11th. Because we're a high-income state, our rankings will tend to be slightly at least lower when we do things in as a percent of income. I can read a list of the states that are ahead of us in, if you want, in the total state, a good percent of income, but they tend to be, some of them tend to be fairly poor states. Wisconsin is 12th in that ranking.
Representative Pleasley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How do we treat like the working family credit and others? Is that taken off the top of this, or is that just treated as expense?
Working family credit, K-12 credit, all those credits would be counted as reduction in income taxes. They'd show up as by lowering our income tax numbers. So that would those would lower our taxes. The property tax refund, however, does not show up as a reduction in taxes. So these numbers don't take into account the property tax refunds because it's not done on the income tax return. Back when it was done on the income tax return, the rankings would have considered a reduction in income taxes, but now it's just not, it's just ignored for these purposes.
Now, Mr. Wilson, when I look at your numbers and then I look at what Representative Wagenius handed out, I'm struck by Ms. Novak and Governing Magazine. When you look at the total tax revenue, when you look at the chart and you look at the state and local side, the slides that Ms. Novak had up on the computer talked about just state taxes. If you look at state and local taxes underneath the total tax revenue chart here, you're right, we're number 5 per capita if we're looking at just state taxes, but if you're looking at state and local, maybe I'm misreading this here. Percentage of personal income, it's number 7. So we're still pretty high as a percentage of personal income on that. Is that correct?
I don't have a copy of it. The handout from Representative Wagenius that handout is looking at total revenue, not total taxes. That makes a huge difference in how we look at the numbers. So
I think, to sum up, and there's tons of paper here, but I guess if you look at total revenue as a percent of personal income, we're more in the mid-range. If we look at total tax as a percentage of personal income, we're still in the top 10. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, I can check on the numbers for total revenue from the census data. I don't have them with me, but the certainly in terms of total taxes, that in terms of state total state taxes, it looks clear. Again, in 2000, it was certainly true in for total state and local taxes.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Wilson or Ms. Novak? Not, let's move along, and I'll call forward Mr. Isaacson. Mr. Isaacson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Isaacson. I direct analysis and evaluation office for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The analysis and evaluation office exists to provide business and economic research to support the activities of the department and our business clients and other increasingly worker clients. We do several different types of research. Most recently done some work in looking at why startups succeed and why they fail, looking at the impact of mergers and acquisitions on Minnesota's economy, trade statistics, tourism statistics, One piece of work that dominates our activity is assisting with business site location decisions. As businesses come to the department for assistance, or when they just access our website for information, we need to have information available for them to make good decisions to make sure that they understand the advantages of Minnesota as a place to locate their establishment or operation. And therein lies why I'm here today. In front of you should find something called Compare Minnesota. This is a publication of which I provided some excerpts. It's a 100-page publication. At one time it was a printed publication. At this time we just have it available as an online publication, and on the cover you can see how to access it. It provides a URL as well as how to get there, what steps to click on. The publication was produced initially about 10 years ago, and we try to update it every 2 years because we kept getting similar types of requests from businesses to answer similar questions. So we decided to put all this information together in one compendium document, and this seems to respond to their initial call for information from Minnesota, what kind of information they need to make site location decisions. So what we've tried to do here is talk to businesses, talk to our staff and management in the department, and in this publication should address those items of which businesses find or ask for to help them better understand the state and why they should locate in the state. The first page is just a cover page, and if you go past there is a table of contents. 10 areas of concentration for this publication, broad areas, demographics, economic diversity, talking about the diversity of our economy, and moving into some of our key industries, the strength, the backbone, foundation of our economy. Then some government measures. Every business wants to know how we compare in terms of state-imposed costs. Some of our workforce elements, education, capital resources, an infrastructure section that looks at energy, transportation, telecommunications, construction and real estate, and then, of course, quality of life, which everyone finds of most importance for Minnesota. Following the table of contents, I have one sample cover page, of which there's 10 of these, and then I've tried to put in one page from each of the 10 chapters subsequent to that, so you all can get a flavor of what's actually included in the publication. I wanted to be sure to provide a glimpse, a flavor of the publication, and encourage you to either ask me some questions and I can get back to you, or visit the publication online along with the other publications the department publishes to help businesses understand our economy and advantages for locating in Minnesota.
So is it true, Mr. Isaacson, that I can look at any number in here and quiz you on it and ask if you know it?
You could ask me, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure I'd have the answer today, though.
All right. Any questions for Mr. Isaacson? Just want to make people aware of some of the other resources and information that's out there.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the publication, although we don't update it annually, we do update high-priority pages, of which business has indicated they want some more up-to-date information, so we try to keep the online version as up-to-date as possible and on an annual basis. And we have found, just as a point of interest, we used to print about 3,000 copies, and today we get about 100,000 copies downloaded from the internet site. There's quite a difference in terms of usage.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page, I guess it's 7.1, I think, is the numbering scheme. There's an interesting chart. This was somewhat discussed yesterday in the biotech presentations. It was one of the things I thought I heard them assert was that it's really hard to attract venture capital investments in central United States. And yet, if I'm looking, I realize the shading is kind of not a very, and I haven't looked at the detail, but it looks like Minnesota is faring not too badly if I'm reading this chart. Maybe I just ask you to sort of read it for me and tell me what this tells me as far as venture capital investment.
Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Resident.
What we're seeing here is overall Minnesota at times does do very well in the venture capital area, although in some industries such as the biosciences we don't track nearly as much as the industry would actually need.
That's
much of that money goes to the coast instead of Minnesota.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Isaacson. Well, next I will call forward then Ms. Schlutteroff from Governor Pawlenty's office to talk about state planning. Ms. Schlutteroff, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you. I'm happy to be here today. I'm going to talk a little bit about, provide a brief overview of past administration's efforts in the area of strategic planning as well as results management. First, we're going to talk about strategic planning, specifically Minnesota Milestones, something that a lot of people know about and was a Carlson endeavor. If you want to look in your packets, there is a handout entitled Minnesota Milestones, right, 2002, that you can take a look at. Minnesota Milestones began in 1991. The belief was that with a shared vision developed from citizen input, they could do some long-term goal setting and measuring of results that would achieve great things for Minnesota. The goal, again, was a 30-year vision, and they focused on socioeconomic outcomes and conditions, a variety of things that are listed within that report, and you can see those on the sheet. The original report was in 1992. It had 20 goals, and they got input from over 10,000 Minnesota citizens. It was updated four times until 2002, which was the most recent update. At that point in time, the update or the information was available online. It provided a lot more local level data, and people were able to get maps, custom searches, data stored, all kinds of things. Today, Minnesota Milestone does not exist in the same form. It's not updated. You can still get the information via the website. However, there are some other private organizations that have filled that void and produced their own report. The Atlas of Minnesota, a joint project from the Center of Rural Policy and Development, Blandin Foundation, and the University of Minnesota Extension Services, actually provides almost the same information that Minnesota Milestones used to provide. Minnesota Milestone was unique in that it was a one-stop shop for all the information, and that's the same kind of setup that they have when they created the Atlas for Minnesota. It's citizen-driven, and it looks at a big-picture way of doing planning. However, the reason why when it was discontinued, I believe, one of the reasons, first of all, there's a high amount of identity associated with the Carlson administration, and each governor's office has their own kind of way of doing strategic planning. Secondly, it required a fair amount of time, staff time, money to support it. Generating the information and making sure it was updated took a lot of effort, and there were starting to get, again, other partnerships, private partnerships that were doing the same activity, and with cost-saving measures, it became less of a priority. It's also important to note the indicators only look behind us. It doesn't really provide a picture of where to move forward. It just shows us sort of where we've been, not where we're going. Next, I want to go to the next governor's effort in strategic planning, which is the governor's big plan. And within your packet, you have the big accountability report. The Ventura Big Plan was deemed as a four-year strategic plan for the Ventura administration. It had 29 initiatives in four different areas: healthy, vital communities, self-sufficient people, service tax systems, and Minnesota as a world competitor to support agencies. And indicators were tracked in each of the areas. What you're seeing is the big accounting, which was sort of the end report on how well the big plan was achieved, how the goals were accomplished. The good thing about the big plan was it laid out the specific goals of the Ventura administration and tracked some progress towards those goals. The drawbacks were that it was very broad. 29 initiatives covered a lot of different things. A number of the initiatives lacked some follow-through. We never really knew if they were achieved. And some of the areas weren't necessarily focus areas for the departments, so there was a disconnect there. It also had lots of big gaps, like environmental issues were not really addressed within the big plan, nor was public safety. The piece that you're looking at, the big accountability report, it's interesting in terms of how it viewed the big plan, but this report on its own has some limitations in that it's very much linked to the big plan. If you aren't going to continue with the big plan, it has nominal value. That has nominal use in terms of how to use information for the future. In terms of timing, I was a part of the Ventura administration at Department of Public Safety, and we didn't really know how we did in terms of achieving the goals until it was too late. The report didn't come out until December, so the last month of the governor's term.
Ms. Slaughteroff, it seems as I look at these two that the Carlson milestones were much more specific in terms of looking at a certain data point that was measurable, and the Ventura goals were somewhat more subjective. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement.
Okay. Thank you. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, the next area that I wanted to talk a little bit about is the Plenty Administration Strategic Plan. As all of you know, today the governor presented his State of the State address, and that basically will be our strategic plan for the 2004 year. He focused on four themes, and has focused on the four themes since he was elected to office, and those are jobs and economic development, health care, education, as well as quality of life. So over the next couple months, we're going to be assembling a written strategic plan that we still are talking about how it's going to be released and how it's going to be used, but certainly the information provided in the State of the State address will be the framework about how we proceed in that area.
Ms. Slaughteroff, do you anticipate there's going to be more specific measures in terms of, like if you're talking about jobs, number of jobs, things like that, as opposed to the Ventura administration was more subjective, or has that been laid out yet?
Mr. Chair, one of the things that we are going to talk about, the next area is results management, and we'll talk a little bit about that in terms of results, and then how are we going to track overall indicators as well.
Okay, well, why don't you jump to that right now, because
okay.
We have session starting at 3 o'clock, and we'll probably see if we can finish off here now without coming back after session. So go ahead.
In the Ventura administration, they started the results management area. It's not started until the end of his term, and they identified goals. Each of the departments identified goals. They went on the public website, and that was a way to do public accountability. They had good success in the way that departments had to focus on key areas. However, the criticism was that sometimes the focus areas were not necessarily priorities within the departments. So there was a disconnect in terms of the public message. The public perceived that those are focus areas and they may not have been. But it still developed awareness. It received approximately 13,000 hits per month when it was used to the greatest extent. And the greatest value, again, is accountability to the citizens. It only focused on external results, though, so there wasn't really an idea of how agencies were doing internally. During the Plenty administration, we have changed and improved how we do reporting on department results. And you'll see, again, in your packet, the newest version of the department results, which is not yet live. We hope this will be live within the next 2 weeks. You'll see there's an accountability message there from the governor on the left side of the page, the clicks by subjects, as well as clicks by departments. The sample is from the Department of Revenue, and as you look at that, you can see a leadership vision stated from the commissioner, the mission statement from the Department of Revenue, as well as the top three goals. On each of those goals, you can go down below, and there's indicators to say how they're going to accomplish those goals. And to your point, Mr. Chair, you asked about overall indicators. That's the next step. We wanted to focus on department goals and what sort of results, sort of a performance measurement system for the commissioners and departments. The next step is sort of, okay, as we look at the Plenty administration and the four areas, which key indicators correspond in those each four areas so that we can track results during the term.
Any questions for Ms. Slaughterhoff?
I got a suggestion.
Representative Earhart.
That she carried back with the chairman a message to the governor. I don't know what the tool for the other one was, but it's the quality of life and economic development. A large part of economic development is transportation needs, and a large part of the quality of life is transportation. He's not putting enough emphasis on the transportation size transit needs of the state. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, So noted. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further questions, thank you, Ms. Schlatteroff. This meeting is adjourned.